Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Scully?
Yes?
Marry me.
I love you and I like you.
I love you and I like you.
I love that woman. I love her more than sharks love blood.
I love you.
You don't.
Hello, this is Nerd Nuptial episode 57.
I'm Tristan Riddell.
And I'm the girl.
And we are here to talk to you about some very fresh things. I mean, this is hot off the presses. This is stuff that we get to do sometimes. It's not all the time, but it's sometimes. And you and I sometimes get a little late to the party because, like,
life happens
like everything else, where we'll see we saw the Lego Batman movie like 3 weeks after everybody else did.
Well, at least we have a kid now to like use as an excuse.
We
didn't always have that excuse. We're always late to the party. So
I when you were pregnant, I told myself, I was like, I am going to use this kid for every excuse in the book. Party I don't want to go to? Sorry. Ripley's being weird. Can't go.
Being weird.
Yeah, like, oh, late to work? Sorry, boss. Ripley was being weird. You know, just, I'm not going to say sick. I'm just going to say she was being weird. So it's not really mine because our little one's kind of a weirdie.
Yeah, it's true.
But anyway, what I'm talking about is that the main topic that we're going to talk about today is Big Little Lies, which is the HBO limited series with Reese Witherspoon, Nicole Kidman, Shailene Woodley, and that just ended. The season finale, series finale, whatever you want to call it, just ended, just aired on HBO, and so we're going to talk about it to you right now. But before we get into that, we're going to talk about a Netflix original movie called The Discovery, which came out this weekend. I think it came out on
the 31st.
On the 31st, yeah. Mm-hmm. And we're recording this on the 2nd. And so both sides of the conversation, real fresh, real, just coming at you.
Yeah. And we'll try not to do spoilers until the very end.
Yeah, I don't, like, there's nothing really we need to spoil about The Discovery in order to talk about it. And with Big Little Lies, there's this one big spoiler that we kind of have to talk about, which we'll save until the end. And so we will let you guys know when spoilers are going to happen. So for those of you who don't know what The Discovery is, it's a Netflix original movie starring Jason Segel, the guy who played Marshall on How I Met Your Mother, if you don't know his name, Rooney Mara, as we know her as Elizabeth from The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, and Robert Redford. So the premise of the story is kind of a sci-fi one, which is interesting because this was a very small movie.
And it felt small too.
It was a small,
like, shot really well, but felt really small.
This was not a major motion picture. Like, this was not sci-fi as in they go to space or anything like that. Like, the premise is that Robert Redford is a scientist of unknown origin or specialty, and he discovers proof, quote unquote, proof of the afterlife, where they gave a little bit of explanation.
Yeah, was it like with the brain waves?
Something,
like,
about brain waves that leave the body at the moment of death. And
they weren't really specific with that science.
And you can't be specific.
No, but it was kind of funny because you're like, it's just the way it is.
Yeah, I mean, well, that's the thing. Like, you establish the premise and either you accept it or you don't. So yeah, brainwaves leave, and then all of a sudden, oh, there's an afterlife. But even Robert Redford at the beginning said, he's like, I'm not calling it an afterlife. You guys are calling it an afterlife. I'm saying that we now have proof that the consciousness, whatever that is, moves on to a separate plane of being. So that way, you make it sciency.
Right.
It's like not saying soul, you're saying life force.
Right. And we're not telling you anything that the trailer doesn't tell you. So.
Oh, yeah. That's the thing. That's the premise of the entire movie.
Right. A lot of people are committing suicide because they want to be on that different plane or that different afterlife to escape, like, either whether it's pain or the life that they have currently.
Right.
So he's not taking responsibility for all the suicides, and yet it weighs heavily on him and also more his son.
Yeah, his son is played by Jason Segel, who is a neurologist, and he kind of, quote unquote, comes home to confront his father, and he meets Rooney Mara along the way.
Right.
So with all that, like, with the 4 million suicides and everything, I like how much original programming that Netflix is pushing, that Netflix is either making and or acquiring. There, you see that there's, they really focused on developing TV shows in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Like first it was just acquisitions where they were just acquiring old rights to shows, and then they started making their own, obviously with House of Cards and Orange is the New Black being the biggest ones. And then you started seeing some stand-up kind of trickle in, and then a movie here and there. And now they're really coming at you with these smaller movies.
Yeah, it's like when we were starting to watch it, I was like, oh, this is a movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, it's cool to see them trying those new things. I think it's good. I can only be good for at least our watching experience because we don't always go to the theater.
And that's the thing, though, is that I like where they're coming at us with the movies that they're making or slash acquiring or things like that is because not all of them you need to see on the big screen. Like
this movie,
The Discovery, you would never see this on the big screen.
No, you would need to.
But it needs to, it's more elevated than just a TV movie. It's not something that would just be released on CBS on a Saturday afternoon.
True.
But it's not something that would need nationwide distribution.
Very true. And they're getting big names to do them. And that also helps the quality of, you know, like the movie or the TV show.
Mm-hmm.
So that's helpful.
So right out of the bat, so we're not really spoiling in, like, so we don't go down point by point for the summary and everything like that. What did you think about The Discovery? What did you think about the movie, the performances, everything?
I think that the idea of it was interesting, but I don't know if it 100% delivered for me. I think that the performances were good, but I feel like where the story went, it was a little lackluster, like, especially towards the end. I don't want to spoil anything, but...
Well, I mean, I think we're going to have to, like, go on the verge of spoiling some things. I mean, like, we're not going to give the big reveal at the end or any of the twists or anything like that. But you can give specifics.
I guess, like... What am I trying to say? I think, like, what I was a little disappointed was kind of, like, the metaphysical stuff at the end. I was kind of like... Okay, I felt like that was too easy. It felt a very Eternal Sunshine to me.
Oh, well, okay, so you want to skip to the end?
Yeah.
Okay, well...
Sorry.
I was kind of hoping for some preamble there. But yeah, like, the ending was my biggest criticism.
Okay.
And it's not so much how they twisted it and how they turned it, because, like, that would be... That's pretty much the only thing that we can spoil for you is the ending about, like, it's not what you think it is.
Right.
But at the same time, I kind of liked how it wasn't what we thought it was. I liked that it was a little bit of a turn. But here's what I didn't like. And here's something that I think a lot of movies are victim of. is you have this interesting concept at the beginning. You spend the entire movie asking the question.
Sure, building.
And then in the last 5 minutes, you have one character... give you all the exposition and explain everything that you could possibly need to know in this really, really quick
monologue.
Scene and quick monologue. And then, all my questions have been answered. Thank you. And so instead of exploring it for 2 hours, you got a knowledge bomb in 2 minutes.
Yeah, it's true. I thought I liked the relationship, like, of, like, the, you know, like, the father-son relationship. Mm-hmm. I liked, you know, like, the developing relationships with Rooney Mara's character. But I didn't care a ton. Did you?
Which part?
About the characters.
I did. I thought the strongest...
I like Jason Segel's character the best.
I thought Jason Segel was a very relatable character.
Yes.
He was kind of the everyman, but not in a boring way.
No, and anytime like he could have humor in there, it was fun. It kind of reminded you that it was Jason Segel, but it was also like, I don't know, it was just a nice way to like ground him as a character.
I think this movie did a good job of inserting humor where it needed to, because when I tell you... Oh, you know, like someone discovered proof of the afterlife and now 4 million people have committed suicide.
Right. It's not exactly an uplifting premise.
You're not like, let's watch this with grandma. You know, like you're not thinking that. Or like, bring the kitties. And so it's definitely dark humor because they're making cadaver jokes and things like that.
Sure.
But it definitely injects it with humor when it needs to, but it's not slapsticky.
Right.
And what I liked about Jason Segel is because is that I could see, I feel like the audience can latch on to him, where because he's discovering for the first time what his father is doing, how his father is living, mm-hmm. who is with his father, where the audience is now with the protagonist discovering these things for the first time.
It's true.
And he has that kind of personality where it's intelligent but questioning, and that's what you want your audience to be. You want your audience to ask questions but also be intelligent and think for themselves. I think the best thing about the movie, though, was how comfortable the performances were. Mm. How comfortable Robert Redford, Rooney Mara, and Jason Segel were being those characters and being in that world.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I felt they were so casual that there wasn't a time where I was just like, oh, they're acting towards the camera. They're trying too hard to be dramatic. I think maybe the only time that it drew attention on themselves, that it had a very... the screenplay had a very... I'm in my 30s and I'm meeting you for the first time, so let's be brutally honest, for no reason.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The dialogue was very, like, a little unrealistic, for sure.
It a little bit, like, the male-female stuff.
Yeah.
It was kind of like a college student wrote it, and, like, where you're just kind of like, oh, this would be clever if he said this, and this would be charming if she said this. And even though I did like it, the back and forth, I did like how honest their relationship was, and I do believe that the Jason Segel Rooney Mara relationship was very believable to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like the progression that they made, that they
took.
That's true.
It wasn't like they threw you into it right away.
Right.
Yeah.
It wasn't like this. It wasn't this whirlwind romance. It wasn't even a slow burn. It was just you could see
attraction that kind of developed over time.
Yeah, you could see two people experiencing this together and forming a bond because of this joint experience.
Right, right. But it didn't happen immediately.
Right, mm-hmm. right. It wasn't out of nowhere, and it wasn't overnight. So I think I really did like that, and it just, yeah, I'd say like the ending. And it wasn't so much the content of the ending, it was just how they presented it.
That's how I felt, too. I felt like it was a little too rushed at mm-hmm. the end. Like you said, we had been building, and then I felt a little like I didn't feel satisfied at the end, just because I felt like they kind of threw it in at the end. I don't feel like they were like ran out of time.
Right.
That's how I felt.
And speaking of running time, I thought it was very refreshing to see a movie be an hour and 45 minutes.
It's true. It is true. You don't see that very often. And I mean, even though I'm saying it's rushed at the end, I feel like maybe they should have, I don't know, shown it a little bit more over time versus just like a big monologue at the end.
Yeah.
But I felt like it was an appropriate amount of time for a movie like that.
Yes, very much so, because it was a slow film.
Mm-hmm.
It was not rush. It was not a rush pace in the least.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it should not go any longer. Like,
right.
Like, and it's just because we live in a world where it used to be like when we were growing up, you know, kids these days. when we were growing up, films over 2 hours would only pretty much be dramas, like intense epic dramas, either
mm-hmm.
like a sword and sandals pick, like Gladiator, or something.
Usually war films,
like,
yeah.
Yeah, or like The English
that.
Patient. Mm-hmm. You know, like you have this epic dramatic tome or something mm-hmm. like that. And you'd have your comedies be under 2 hours and your action films be under 2 hours.
Yeah.
Now, of course, there's exceptions to every rule.
Oh, like, of course.
Like, you guys don't need to send me a list. But nowadays, you have comic book films that are 2.5 hours.
Right.
And I cannot remember for the life of me, but there was a comedy film that was 2 hours and 10 minutes. And I was like, what is going on? What is happening? What, like, and it's just, I'm not saying every movie has to be 90 minutes, but let's...
No, yeah.
Let's not overindulge ourselves as filmmakers here.
Well, I feel like, you know, it depends on the movie and it depends on the content, but I feel like it was very aware of what it was. So mm-hmm. I feel like, at least from a standpoint of, like, runtime, I think that they did a good job of keeping it short and sweet.
Yeah.
Because if you, with that content, I mean, think about it, like, with the content of... this whole idea of like suicides and, you know, science and everything like that, it would get a little monotonous if I think you went too long with it.
Yeah, I agree. And it's, you need to limit how much you expose your audience to that much dismal death.
Right, right. It reminded me a lot of like a Fringe episode that just kind of like went a little deeper.
I never really thought of that, but that's, yeah, I think that's spot on. Like a serious Fringe episode that just expanded.
Yeah.
Had a budget.
Yeah. Had a very, well, a budget, but like still felt small.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I really enjoy, I hope that Netflix does more of this, stuff where like, I have seen them kind of branch out. I think they just acquired they co-financed a Will Smith movie that looks like a sci-fi adventure disaster film.
Okay.
And
that scares me a little bit.
I know. And I'm just like, I saw the trailer, at least it was like a teaser, and I'm just like, okay, this just looks like nonsense. But now they just got the rights to Scorsese's next film.
Oh my gosh.
How insane is that?
That's crazy.
It's Scorsese's next film, and it's going to have Pacino, De Niro, as well as Pesci.
Oh my gosh.
All three of those people are going to be in Scorsese's next film, and it's going to be exclusively on Netflix.
Wow.
That's a big deal.
That is a big deal. That's
now,
crazy.
Now, granted, that is not going to, I'm sure that that's not going to have as small a scale as The Discovery.
Right, absolutely.
But I was like, that's what I want to move towards is like, if we're going to, if we're already seeing a culture where, like, you and I, we only go to the theater if it's a big budget film. Like if it's a sci-fi film or a Nolan film or a superhero film.
Right.
Because if I'm going to spend $35 for the two of us to go see a film together, I want to be wowed. I want to get the entire audiovisual experience. I'm not going to see two British people with parasols strolling on the beach. I don't want to see that. I can watch that on my screen at home.
Right, right.
And so I would love to see Netflix acquire these smaller films and leave
the big budget
films mm-hmm. to the distributors.
Yeah, I completely agree.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I enjoyed it. I think it was like a nice Sunday afternoon movie, which we watched together. but I feel like I said at the end, it was a little lackluster for me. Can we briefly talk about Bob's Burgers?
Oh my, yes. Yes, go ahead.
So the other night, so we both fall asleep to Bob's Burgers often.
Almost nightly.
And especially when I can't sleep, I usually put that on my phone and like put it underneath my pillow and like listen to an episode, and then I usually can go back to sleep because I know them so, so well. And I went to go find some more. Well, we both did. We were like, oh, let's watch some Bob's Burgers. And we could only find the first two seasons, and they used to have
Five seasons,
yeah.
They didn't have the sixth
season.
No,
they didn't.
Because we're currently on the seventh.
Right. But they only have one and two, and we did some research, and in like, 2 weeks is going to be gone?
Yeah, in 2 weeks, the first two seasons are going to be
gone. So we seriously had a freak out.
we you were doing something in the kitchen.
Yeah.
And I was in the bedroom on my tablet, and I was like, baby, no!
Yeah, and like, I know this sounds so silly, but it does. It's going to affect our life. it's going to. No, it's a big deal. So you immediately.
I did. I'm a little ashamed of this because.
I can't even. I don't want to know how much.
You don't want to know how much I spent, because that's the thing is that you and I, like, we've been trying to cut down.
Yeah, we've been doing now.
I don't know if you guys know this, but we had a baby. And we've been trying to cut down. We've been doing a horrible job of it, clearly. But, you know, like, we've been trying to tighten the belt.
Yeah, I mean, we did take the baby to Hot Topic yesterday, but that's okay, whatever.
But we didn't buy anything.
That's true. We just perused.
Not even a button. and so I didn't even think about it. I barely thought about it. I was like, no, I gotta have Bob's Burgers. And here we go. And ironically, they had a sale going on iTunes on the same.
I think it's a conspiracy.
Like on the same day that it came down on Netflix, they had a sale going on iTunes, because on iTunes, Bob's Burgers for some reason was always proportionately higher than all the other shows. I don't know why. It was like $45 for a season. Actually, iTunes seasons can be ridiculously high, and for a 22-minute sitcom,
animated
animated sitcom, $45. per season is kind of a bit much. And so I didn't want, we never really bought the season pass. Mm-mm. We would just wait for it to come up. Mm-hmm. And then they had them on sale for $20, some a little bit less. And I was just like, okay. And I just said, buy season one, buy season two, buy season three. And I went through all of them except for the current one, because that's still available on the Fox app. And I was just like, okay, we own that now. Like, we own Bob's Burgers. Because that's the thing. When Netflix takes something away that we rely on, like, if they ever take away Cleveland Show or American Dad, that'll be a rough time, too. But
yeah.
I think Fox is consolidating their shows because they own Hulu. Like, Fox, mm-hmm. I don't know if they developed Hulu or if they acquired Hulu. But I feel like they're probably going to, like, we'll probably see ads for every season of Bob's Burgers on Hulu soon.
Probably.
Because they took away Buffy, Angel, and Firefly on Netflix.
Yeah.
And those are some supreme shows. Not all Fox properties. Oh, actually, no. Wait, they are. They are all Fox properties. Even though Angel and Buffy were on the WB, I think they were produced by 20th Century Fox.
Okay.
If I remember correctly.
So they're just trying to take all their goodies back.
Yeah, and I feel like that's what CBS is doing. Is like CBS is taking away, like, you'll mark my words, when Star Trek Discovery comes out, if it ever comes out, you'll see Star Trek and Next Gen, Deep Space Nine, Voyager, Enterprise, and everything like that. You'll see that taken down off of Netflix and put up on their CBS All Access app.
Oh, I'm sure. Because then you have to have every single different app, apparently, you know, to watch whatever you want to watch.
And I think, I mean, Netflix is going to have a hard time because for a big portion of people, Netflix is really their only source of TV.
True.
Like, well, they don't even really watch it. Movies that much. Yeah. We don't even watch movies that much on Netflix.
No,
we
it's mainly more watch TV. It
for TV. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's probably another reason why Netflix is pushing so hard on original movies, original TV shows, and original comedy.
Because they know it's coming.
Yeah, everybody's going to have their own app. Everything's going to be exclusive. If you want a CBS show, you're going to have to watch it on the CBS app. You want a Fox show, you're going to have to watch it on the Fox app. And you're going to have to pay a premium fee for every single channel. Because everybody knows cable is dying.
Right.
Well, I mean, that might be an overstatement, but it's going to die someday. Right. Things are going to change.
Ugh.
And it's going to be rough.
Yeah, seriously. Well, we have them now, so I feel I can rest assured. But apparently it's a thing where people, it's like a club where people talked about, like, that they have to fall asleep to cartoons.
In my research, like, when I was trying to figure out why I was coming down. Oh, also, side note, because I'll get to that. Like, I went on Twitter and started, you know, seeing if everybody else was reacting. Whenever something goes down on Netflix or gets taken off on Netflix, it's not always Netflix's choice. Like,
oh, were people blaming Netflix?
Oh, yeah. Like, so many people are saying,
no,
like,
it's not their content.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing. Like, sometimes if a show's not performing, yeah, they won't renew the license. But other times, like Fox or CBS or NBC will say, like, okay, you get the show for 3 years and then we're taking it back.
Right. This happens all the time.
Yeah, it happens all the time, and people just don't understand how it works. Anyway, yeah, so I was Googling Bob's Burgers taken out on Netflix, and then I saw a Reddit where people were complaining about it. And then I saw somebody said, oh, yeah, I fall asleep almost nightly to Bob's Burgers, American Dad, and
Family Guy,
and some other stuff, like Simpsons and whatnot. And another person said, oh, you should check out this subreddit. And it was like sleepy cartoons or something like that.
That's awesome.
Sleepy time cartoons. And there's this whole group online of people talking about what they fall asleep to.
That's awesome.
In the animated world. And I just thought that was so funny because that is such a huge part of you and I's nighttime experience.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it helps me with my insomnia. Although that has not been a problem since Ripley came.
It's true.
I didn't sleep for like 3 months when I was pregnant, but when she came, I'm like, I'm good.
It's true. Like,
I'm asleep.
Knowing that we have like 2 a.m. feedings and 4 a.m. feedings and everything like that, I see the clock and it's 10 o'clock and I'm like, okay, I'm going to go to sleep.
Yeah, seriously.
And then I am asleep. It's weird.
It's weird.
Like, it's gotten a little easier to do that. But
yeah, for sure.
Yeah. All right. Well, how about we move on to
Big Little Lies.
Big Little Lies.
Yeah, We mentioned that we were watching it, but we didn't talk at all about it, really, did we?
Nothing too extreme. No. Nothing too intense. And like we said, we're not going to spoil anything until the end of the conversation. We will let you know.
Yeah, we're going to talk about the season, though.
Yeah.
But, so if you haven't checked it out, you probably should.
Yeah, if you haven't seen anything of Big Little Lies, just know that we recommend that you watch it. Actually, I don't want to talk for you.
No, I would.
Yeah, I would recommend watching it. It's on HBO, and if you have HBO Go, you can watch any episode. And it, the premise of the show is there was a death. Mm-hmm. We don't know if it was a murder or not. It's being investigated as a murder, but we don't know who died, and we don't know who did the killing until tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And so for 7 episodes, they were weaving in this police interrogation footage of all these side characters.
Mm-hmm.
Like nobody was a main character. Nobody was someone who we really saw too terribly much in the main storyline, but they would just like come in with, you know, comments and everything like that. I think David E. Kelly, the creator and writer of the show or producer of the show, called it the Greek Chorus.
Yeah.
And yeah. I thought that was interesting. And so it was all centered around this group of affluent women,
Monterey Bay,
mm-hmm. who are very much the stereotypical PTA moms. They're very invested in their kids' mm-hmm. education, and they volunteer at the school. That's pretty much all they talk about. And
most of them, they're mainly stay-at-home moms,
right?
Or they have like a side job or something like that.
And then there's the one mom who's a CEO, right. And is looked down upon because she's not a stay-at-home mom,
right? Yeah.
And so it's all of that, and all of them are at each other's throats. Like there's alliances, gossip. There's groups, there's gossip, there's lies, infidelity, and everything like that. And so on the surface, like when I saw the first episode, I was just like, this show is not for us.
Yeah, you were not into it at all.
I was not into it in the least. I was just like, why do I care about this? Like, this just represents so many things that I hate. I was like, this is Bravo TV. This is like Real Housewives of Miami, but just with an HBO budget. And it's written. That's what I thought it was.
No, yeah.
Thankfully, I was wrong.
Yeah.
So what did you think of the season, of the 7 episodes? Like,
well, I think that it did a really, I mean, it's hard to lose with those actresses.
They got some hardcore talent.
Yeah, so they had Nicole Kidman, you know, Reese Witherspoon, Laura Dern.
Laura Dern.
Yeah. So it's Shailene Woodley. So it was really hard. I was like, no, we need to give this a chance after the first episode, because I was like, I liked the performances. Adam mm-hmm. Scott was in it.
Adam Scott. How can you say no to Adam Scott, you know? True. But yeah, you are the one that said, no, let's keep going.
Yeah, it's true. So I think once you're able to get past that part, I think the idea of this murder is kind of what kept us into it.
Yes.
Yeah,
that's just, like, if that wasn't the framing device, if there was no mm-hmm. mystery element to it, I would have given up.
Yeah. I think there are certain elements that were very predictable. Mm-hmm. Like there's a rape situation involved, and you totally called like this whole scenario of this rape.
From the word go.
From the word go, you were like, oh, she, yeah. Like we just kind of figured out that character.
Mm-hmm.
But there were other elements that I feel like were surprising, and I feel like they did a really good job, especially in this last episode, of hiding what was going to happen. Like, mm-hmm. I didn't know what I had an idea of what was going to happen with the murder, but I feel like the entire series was trying to trick you.
And that's pretty much, that's the show, is that they did a very good job of giving you all of these scenarios that are very believable. Mm-hmm. There's all these little feuds between two pairs of people, mm-hmm. where it's just like, oh, could it be the new husband and the ex-husband that kill each other?
Yeah.
Could it be Reese Witherspoon and
the new wife?
Could it be the woman who's new to town and the CEO, because she thinks that her kid is being abused by her kid? You know, they did a great...
So many combinations.
And sometimes they'd get flip-flopped or switched up as the show went on. So you're like if whatever you called in the first episode, you're like, oh, wait, no. Like, maybe it's this one. And then you get to the second episode and you're like, oh, maybe it's them. You know,
it's true.
It did a great job of dancing around.
Yeah. even in the last episode, I feel like they were still dancing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I feel like they showed their cards a little bit more in that episode, but I feel like up until that point, we both were like speculating all week of who it was, and we were wrong. So that was kind of refreshing that we were wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, that was nice. That was nice because even like I even had like side bets on, because it wasn't just... It wasn't just who got murdered. It was like, who's abusing this kid?
Yeah.
And it wasn't just like, who's abusing this kid, but like, who was the actual rapist from this woman's past and everything like that. And so I feel wrong talking about these horrible situations and calling them side bets. But
no, but we don't know. We didn't know that information. So you had to like, you're like, okay, well, this should be revealed in this episode. So... who do you think it is?
Right.
You know.
Right. And I was wrong almost across the board.
Yeah.
Of the final episode. Was I right a lot of the times with all the other stuff coming up? Yes. And so, was that sometimes pretty predictable? Sadly, yes.
Yeah.
But no, the ending episode kept us guessing.
It was good. It was good. Yeah. What did you like about it?
This was a very well-crafted show.
Mm-hmm.
This was not only great talent in front of the camera, this was great talent behind the camera.
Yeah. The style.
I need to do some research on who the cinematographer was, who was the music supervisor, and who was the costumer, because everything was just really well put together. It was just, it's
pretty to look at.
It was very pretty to look at. It was, I mean, the location helps.
Well, that's true.
Gorgeous beach that's community, true. And a gorgeous women.
Right.
Gorgeous
homes.
Oh my gosh, like these $15 million homes.
Seriously.
It's insane. and then you had Shailene Woodley's home.
Yeah. Well, at least it was realistic, though.
Very true. Yeah. Yeah. That's the thing. Like, that was one thing that was nice, because you had the CEO who had this just...
mansion.
The absolute mansion on the beach. And then you had Shailene Woodley, who did part-time, you know, accounting.
Yeah.
And she had a one-bedroom house that she let her kid have the bedroom, and she slept on a pull-out couch.
Right.
So yeah, so it was still realistic in that realm. But yeah, it's just, I was the quality of television today, and I know like HBO has been doing this for decades now.
Mm-hmm.
But the quality of television, not just of the stories and being able to use the F word, but just the time and effort and thought put into the stories and the cinematography, like down to what type of lenses you're going to use, and you know, like what kind of color palette you're going to use, and everything like that. The color palette of the show was very specific.
Mm-hmm.
Like there was really nothing that looked out of place.
It's true.
And I think that's something that you normally only see in motion pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And so the line is blurring, especially when you get Nicole Kidman and Reese Witherspoon in a TV show.
It's true.
And this was Reese Witherspoon's, I think this was her pet project. I think she was the one, I think she was the EP who kind of launched it off the ground. Now, granted, David E. Kelly, who I love David E. Kelly shows.
Yeah.
And this is very different from any other show he's ever done. Very different. And, but I feel, I could be wrong, but I feel like she was kind of the one. She's been producing a whole lot more.
Mm-hmm.
Like she produced Gone Girl. Mm-hmm. She was that was her movie.
Yeah.
Was Gone Girl. And so I feel like that was, this is kind of her show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I felt that too. I feel like, especially like in the credits, I feel like you see that more, that it's her baby kind of thing.
Yeah.
I feel like it was very specific and very planned, everything. Mm-hmm. And like all the shots feel very cinematic in nature. And I feel like it draws you more into it. Also, I think it was, again, the perfect length, having this many episodes to tell this story. Like, I think they made good use of their time.
Yes.
By exploring the characters to fool us. I didn't feel like there was a lot of wasted time.
No, I think, no, I don't think
maybe there was... like one episode I felt a little like shortchanged. I can't remember which one it was, but it was earlier on. And I feel like it really delivered on, okay, we're establishing these characters, we get to know these characters. We'll start to question those characters and who's going to do what to each other.
Right.
So I appreciate that.
Yeah, I don't feel like we got... I do agree with you that they made good use of their time because, you know, we just... The last limited event series that we saw on HBO was The Young Pope. And towards the end, we started feeling like, oh, they're wasting our time. They ran out of steam.
I feel like I liked the concept of The Young Pope more. And I liked Jude Law's character a lot. But I feel like that whole series really did not deliver compared to this one.
It's true. Yeah, I think that is you put it perfectly. The concept of The Young Pope is a better one than Big Little Lies. but Big Little Lies delivered way more on its concept.
Absolutely.
And even though they did deliver, and I feel bad saying this, but I felt like the Nicole Kidman's abuse story became redundant very quickly.
I can see where you're saying that, and yet I feel like because it plays, you know, all the way through, it didn't feel super redundant to me. Because I feel like there was a build. Mm-hmm. It was like we started seeing abuse, like not small abuse, because there's no such thing as small abuse, but we saw like hints of this is a bad situation, and then we saw like extreme. I mean, by the ending episode, we see him like throwing her around. So I feel like...
Like not just grabbing her hair, but actually hitting her in the ribs.
Right, it's not just like a part of their foreplay. It becomes, you know, this is becoming progressively worse. So I feel like that was part of the character build for me. So I was fine with it.
Okay, as I'm saying it, and because I was trying to rationalize this in my head, where even though it did become redundant in my opinion, well... With a woman in that situation, that's her daily life.
Right.
Her fear is of that is every day. It's not like it's going to be one big event and then she's going to do something about it, or one big event and then it goes away. This is a daily battle that she has to go through. And so because it felt redundant to me, even though I've never experienced that, it probably was much more realistic from that character's perspective.
Well, and I think it also helped us to understand why she would leave him, why she needed to get out. It wasn't just like, I want to leave you. It was, I felt a lot of anticipation, a lot of anxiety for her to get out of that situation, to get out of the car. You know, like you felt dire. And I feel like if we hadn't built up to that, I don't think that we would feel that dire situation, which, you know, was important towards the end.
You're right. You're right. You are right. And
I know.
It was interesting what they did with Reese Witherspoon's character, because in the first episode, it was clear that they were focusing on Reese Witherspoon's character, where it was like, oh, if there was a protagonist... even though this is very much a shared story.
Oh, yeah.
In that first episode, even the first moments of the first episode, if you had to proclaim a protagonist, it would be Reese Witherspoon's Madeline. And like, even the side characters, the chorus, if you will, were talking about how she was a horrible person. She kept sticking her nose in other people's business. Mm-hmm. And, like, she isolated...
She's like the girl you love to hate kind of
situation.
Yeah,
that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But then, like, as we were moving on, I found myself sympathizing with this character. I was like, oh, like these people just don't understand. I mean, like, she's a good person. She may be misunderstood. She might be, you know, like, she might crank up her emotions to an 11 or like overreact sometimes, but no, she's pretty decent. And so I couldn't really relate to all this hate, and I was wondering where it was coming from. But as the show was going on, you started to realize that no one was innocent. Like, no one.
No, yeah.
Like, no one was squeaky clean. Like,
except
everybody.
For Adam Scott.
Even Adam Scott, though, like, they tried to show.
That's true. It's true.
Well, I mean, like, this is so minor. But
oh,
they...
like with the ex-wife? The other wife?
Oh, yeah. Like, you saw this, like, does he have a wandering eye?
Kind of a
does
lust,
he not?
Yeah.
Like, is he not satisfied with his relationship with Madeline? And, like, has he cheated before? You know, and everything like that. And so, like, they have you asking those questions. And then, boom, they come out of left field with another person and an infidelity. Mm-hmm. And it's very much a...
Yeah, I just want to protect Adam Scott.
That's true. That's your knee jerk.
No, it was in, yeah, I think, I feel like my only criticism of Reese Witherspoon is that I feel like it was every Reese Witherspoon role that she plays. So I felt like it was a little like, okay, she always plays that role. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I feel like that role probably was the most difficult to play because it wasn't so straightforward. Like, okay, well, clearly, you know, Nicole Kidman's the abused wife. Mm-hmm. She's got some meat there to work with, you know.
And Shailene Woodley is the
rape victim.
Is the rape victim and right. Like the single mom.
So, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, like some people would call that more difficult to attract the audience
right.
to her predicament. Well, okay. So we've gone on a while without
trying
not to spoil anything. There was a few things here. Like we did admit like, oh, well, Nicole Kidman is abused. You figure that out in like episode two, maybe or at the end of episode one.
Hopefully you've watched most of the episodes if you're listening.
Yeah. Or if you're thinking about it, like nothing that we have said so far are big revelations.
No.
Like it's the framework of the show.
Right.
And so like with Shailene Woodley being a rape victim, and Nicole Kidman being in an abusive relationship. This mm-hmm. is concepts that are very early on, and we're not ruining anything. But now...
Let's spoil.
We're going into spoiler territory. So if you have not seen any episode, we recommend that you go watch it now, and you do not listen to the rest of the episode.
You need to have watched the finale.
Especially the finale. We're very much going to ruin the finale, so I'm saying it again. Spoiler territory for the entire show, especially... the last 5 minutes of the finale.
Right.
All right. Here we go. So, who did you think was going to be the murdered one and the murderer?
Well, okay. So, I honestly did not know through the entire thing until I feel like this episode, I felt like there was some clues. But remember, we were talking, we thought it was going to be more about the Amabella character about the abuse. So like we were speculating, and last week you were like, I think it'll be the dad.
I thought it was going to be Amabella's dad being murdered by Laura Dern, because we saw that Laura Dern is just like, she can fly off the handle like crazy.
Right, right.
And the husband.
And they had like a relationship that was kind of, sometimes they would fight.
Yeah, but it was nothing weird. It was really, no. It was really. I think that's the reason why, is because I felt like they had the most normal relationship.
That's true.
And so that's why I was drawn to them. And their kid was being abused. And there was a moment when, like, when Amabella came back with a bite mark.
Yeah.
That's when I was like, oh, does that mean it's sexual?
Right.
And so I was like, if it's sexual, I doubt that it's another kid her age. And so maybe she's being abused at home, and she's being molested by her father. And so that's why I thought maybe that's what's going to happen.
And didn't you get the impression like Laura Dern was way more concerned than the dad?
Yes.
About the abuse.
Yes.
Like, so that was kind of a clue, but it was a misdirection. Mm-hmm. So we thought, and then when you said that, I was like, oh, you're probably right.
I really thought I was going to be right.
Yeah. Yeah. And then it was interesting that they revealed so quickly in this final episode who the abuser was.
Because that was a big plot point of the show, was who is abusing Amabella.
Right, right.
And it was one of the twins from Nicole Kidman's character, Celeste. Mm-hmm. And I have to admit, like, when that happened, I was like, son of a bitch!
But I liked the fact that I didn't see that coming. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't think about the twins at all. Like, I didn't think about it being another kid. I thought it was going to be the dad. I had that in my head then, from then on.
And the beauty of that pick, of it being one of the twins, Max, is that it's something that you don't suspect, or at least we didn't suspect. Mm-hmm. You guys probably did. But after it's revealed, you realize, oh, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah, it's true. It's true, because he witnessed abuse. How could he not hear his parents, you know? And they even like show that. So, it, you know, that full circle idea, and it even gives more reason for Nicole Kidman's character to leave. Mm-hmm. You know, like, my kid is, you know, in trouble, and he's acting out because of what he's witnessing, and he loves his dad, but he's seeing this bad behavior. Yeah. I felt like that whole party scene, I was on pins and needles because of Celeste's situation. Like, when I can't remember.
I don't know. I can never remember the character's name. Skarsgård.
Skarsgård. When he mentioned like the smoke detectors and
Perry's his name.
Right. In her apartment.
Mm-hmm.
And that feeling of like, what does she do? Does she tell the babysitter? Does she go with him? Like that moment, like that was such a real moment. And you just felt for her because mm-hmm. you were like, oh, what would you do in that situation? You know, would you go? Would you scream? What would you do? You know, would you have that fight right in front of the kids? What would you do?
Me personally, I've never been an abused woman. So right. I have no idea what her frame of mind or what kind of psyche.
And this is
goes
a touchy thing. I mean, there are, you know, obviously abused women everywhere and, you know, it's a horrible situation and... But, it's hard.
But like me personally, for someone who hasn't been in that situation, I never would have gotten in the car with him.
Right.
I would have had it out in that moment. I would have said, I would have had the babysitter there. I would have said like, okay, like babysitter, sit here with the kids right now, Perry, I'm calling the police.
Easier said than done.
I know exactly. That's what I'm saying. Like saying it out loud. You know, I'm not saying...
because you want to protect your kids.
Yeah, I'm not saying what I would have done would have been the best thing. I'm not saying that at all.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that I wouldn't have gotten in the car with him. But after seeing how ballistic he goes at the end of the episode...
Yeah.
He probably would have just gone ballistic there in the house.
Oh, yeah. Seriously. The only thing that I think I would have factored in would have been how he totally did not want to show his sons...
True.
That, like, remember, like, they were about to come into the bathroom. He was like, no. Your mom's not feeling well.
But as a mother, would you risk
that situation? Because you don't know. Yeah. Would he actually act out or not? Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, I mean, obviously, like, the fact that we're even talking about that, it just shows, like, the tension that you felt.
That was a great moment.
It was.
When he was so casually talked about her secret apartment.
Yes. Yeah.
That was a very great moment.
Yeah. And the same thing with, like, in the car. With like when finally Laura Dern's character is like, hey,
and they clearly know right away. They're like, oh my god, we walked in on something.
Right. But it's that moment where you're like, the audience can take a deep breath, mm-hmm. be like, okay, she's out of the car now, you know. But then your breath back in because you're following her around the party and he's following her around the party and you're like, oh my gosh, what's gonna happen? Mm-hmm. So I really enjoyed that tension. I also wasn't sure whether they were going to go for the obvious choice of the abuse relationship of, you know, like if we're going to go that route for the murder or are we, you know, when they started, like the two ex-husbands started to fight, I was like, okay, are they completely throwing me here?
Mm-hmm.
Did you feel that too?
It was,
or no?
No. Well, okay. It was interesting because as the show was progressing, as the episode was progressing, they kind of made it clear that Perry was going to be a factor. Somehow he was going to be in the final moments of the murder. Like he was going to be involved with the murder more directly than not. Because as the show was going on, they were showing way more exposure to Perry and Celeste than any other storyline.
That's true.
Not Reese Witherspoon's infidelity.
That's true.
Not Adam Scott.
They kind of dropped those more or less. I mean, you saw the tension of, you know, exes, but... Eh.
But what I'm saying is that those things became trivial.
Yeah.
As you were watching Celeste run away, because you were scared for Celeste, and as you're watching her go through the party... Like, when you're watching Adam Scott, like, push the ex-husband, you're like, I don't care.
Right. And that's true. And yet, at the same time, I was like, well, are they completely going to use that? And, you know, this whole Nicole Kidman thing was just mm-hmm. to, like, confuse me. So, that was interesting.
So, let's get down to
okay.
it.
Okay.
What did you think of Perry being the one murdered?
I felt like it was a little bit like you wanted that to happen, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that's kind of like the thing that bothered me a little bit because we had all this anticipation clearly throughout all the episodes. We didn't know who it was. We kept guessing. And then it's more of the obvious choice.
Yeah.
How did you feel then?
I went through a journey over the past five, like the last 5 minutes, where my knee-jerk reaction is, really?
Yeah.
Like, out of everyone in the episode, like, here's the thing. Out of every single character, like, no one deserved to die except Perry.
Right?
Because, like, it's true. You know, like, Reese Witherspoon cheated on her husband. Okay. It's HBO.
Right.
You know, like, Shailene Woodley did nothing wrong. Mm-hmm. She was the victim, and right. we never knew who the rapist was.
Right.
And then you have, the ex-husband who's just kind of a jerk.
Right. He's just
He's just a jerk.
Yeah.
And then, like, the kid who is abusing Emma Bella, and you're just like, he's a kid, you know, he'll get help and he'll be able to grow out of it. And so, like,
and it was only if they revealed that it was an adult doing it,
right.
would that be okay?
But very, you know, very early on in the right. episode, they revealed that it was another kid. So Perry was the only person, quote unquote, evil enough to die. And then on top of that, they made him the rapist as well of Shailene Woodley's character.
That pissed me off.
I'm like, really? This small of a world? She happens to move to the exact town and befriends the wife of her rapist 5 years ago, who she'd never met before or seen since?
Yeah.
And then so you have this bad guy, like, you have all these bad people mm-hmm. just bundled up into one person that you get to focus your hate.
Well,
and then that's the person that
felt
that
too
kill.
Easy to me.
It felt very easy. And my knee-jerk was, that's stupid. This is too, like, you tied it in a bow. This isn't, like, the whole show felt like amped up real life, and then the ending felt like fan service and mm-hmm. fiction. But as I was accepting it, as I was going on, as they were showing the epilogue of, like, and everything like that, was it an overly happy ending? 100%. Was it cheesy? Absolutely. But here's the thing. It's a story about all these women going through horrible things
mm-hmm.
and fighting each other, backstabbing each other, lying and cheating, and there's violence. And you have the premise of the show, which I took as, like, the Real Housewives of Monterey. And then it ends with all of them friends and together.
Yeah, with their children.
And with their children having each other's back. And the evil abuser rapist is dead and can't hurt anybody anymore. That's an ending you want to see.
It's true. I know. I agree. It was definitely like a feel good ending.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that they all had this secret that kind of bonded them together, it was like the definition of a happy ending. It was very much so like, yay.
Because if TV and movies have taught me anything, if you don't like someone, they deserve to die.
Well, no.
He was a woman abuser and rapist.
So, but, you know, it's one of those situations where I think the thing that bothered me, like, I liked the ending because you did feel good. You felt closure.
Mm-hmm.
You felt this redemption of, like, okay, these women now are you know, on this path together, and, you know, everyone's safe. But at the same time, I think that the moment that put me over, like, not appreciating it 100%, was the fact that he was the rapist too.
Yeah, that was a step too far.
And yet, if he wasn't, there was that piece of the puzzle that they needed to find the rapist.
Did we really need to find the rapist?
Yes, you did, from a story standpoint, because this girl sleeps with her gun underneath her pillow
mm-hmm.
and brings it with her and tries to, you know, find him and, you know, is afraid, you know, that her son, you know, has these tendencies or whatever, or violence. And so if you didn't, that character's chapter would be still open.
Yes.
Would you be okay with that?
I would absolutely be okay with that, because here's the thing, is that would be more like real life. In my mind, having some of those things not answered, having that where she never figures out who it is or never seeing him again.
No, I completely agree with you, but I think from I don't think that would have happened.
I understand that, and I understand that this isn't real life, and right. I understand this ending is not real life.
Well, and I'm also glad that they didn't, you know, like the coffee shop guy. I'm glad that that wasn't like her hope was like, oh, I found a good guy now. Like, I'm glad that that wasn't the way that she solved that problem. At least like her rapist did die.
Yeah.
You know, it was more of like, okay, now we have that closure.
Yeah. It's true. I have to remind myself. I was like, yes, this is a TV show.
It's TV.
Like,
yeah.
You want to please your fans and everything like that. Right. It's just, I guess I'm so used to these sardonic endings to things.
Well, we appreciate the sardonic endings too.
I do. I do appreciate not giving the audience everything that they want. I do appreciate leaving the audience with questions and not necessarily wrapping everything up in a bow. But sometimes I do. Sometimes I do like things that are wrapped up in a bow. And I actually just talked about that on Punch It. with Charlene Schmidt, which you can find on thenerdparty.com, where we talk about series finales, and I was talking about Parks and Rec, about how that was an ending that where everything was wrapped up in a bow.
Yeah, it's true.
But yeah, it's just,
I understand though that this type of show didn't necessarily need to be tied up in a bow, but I feel like because of the content, you did need that closure.
And it was a powerful feminist message that all of these women, where it's very stereotypical to, and it's pervasive in our media, where if you get a group of women together, no matter how much they like each other or don't like each other, they're going to be pulling hair and scratching out eyes and backstabbing.
Well, and that was the entire show up until
this moment. Yeah. And so this showed us this hope of all these women set aside their differences, got together, their kids are playing with each other, and they killed a rapist and an abuser. So here's the thing. The new wife, Bonnie.
Yeah.
She was the one.
Yeah.
Who pushed him down the stairs.
Yeah.
What did you think of her being the one who actually broke the straw?
I had a feeling that it was going to be her when she started following.
Yes. I figured that she was going to be the one who proverbially pulled the trigger.
Right. Right. I think I was okay with it. Because I didn't see it coming the entire time. And even, like, I even though
she's kind of the outsider.
Yeah.
She's not in the group of that women.
And that's how she got into that group. So I think I liked that. Yeah, I liked that.
And it was a way for Madeline and Bonnie to make peace. They have this shared secret.
Right.
They can now move past their differences.
And she was a good person. Like, she kept trying.
Out of everyone, Bonnie was probably,
yeah,
like, one of the nicer people.
Right. Yeah. So I feel like she had, you know, even though she was the one, well, I mean, she was the murderer.
Quote unquote.
Quote unquote. I mean, pushing.
And I didn't understand that either, like the involuntary manslaughter, 12 months probation or something like that. I'm like, if it's in self-defense, do you really have to be on like community service and everything? Like he even, like the cop at the end was saying, like, oh, if Celeste did it, you know, it's self-defense, it's involuntary manslaughter, she'll get community service and everything like that. Why on earth? If someone is beating you and kicking you and you push them down the stairs to protect yourself, why on earth would you have, like, get any kind of punishment whatsoever? I mean, that's not a question for this podcast, but
I don't know.
Like, I don't know. I don't have a law degree. Yeah. Anyway.
Celeste does. So.
Yes, she does. I kind of wanted to see a little bit more of that. Because they ended it with the investigator not buying it. Mm-hmm. Where, okay, so apparently what happened off screen is that all the women, got together and said, okay, here's our story.
Right.
And what they said was is that while he was furiously beating Celeste, that he tripped on his own accord down the stairs and then fell to his death.
Mm-hmm.
In actuality, Bonnie pushed him, righteously so.
Right.
And so I'm guessing that Celeste was probably the one, because she had a law degree, where she figured out, okay, she was probably the one who said, let's all get together, let's get our story straight. I wanted to see that.
You wanted to see that conversation?
Even if it was just 5 seconds where all of them stand up, like Celeste is, you know, like recovering from her wounds. Everybody stands up. All the girls, I keep doing that. I apologize. All the women look at each other and say, okay, here's what we're gonna say. Mm-hmm. And then they cut. Yeah.
I did appreciate Kravitz. What's her first name?
Bonnie.
But no, Bonnie. But what's her Kravitz first name?
Zoe.
Okay. Yeah, Zoe Kravitz. Yeah. I did appreciate, like, in the investigation room, she was clearly, like, rattled.
Mm-hmm. She was the one who was most rattled. Yes. Even more so than Celeste.
Yes. Whereas all the rest were kind of, like, just, I mean, they were abused and you could tell they were hurt from mm-hmm. the situation and upset. But you could tell that Bonnie, like, until you saw her push him down the steps, you were like, why is she so upset? Mm-hmm. And then it was revealed why. Mm-hmm. And so I appreciate that performance because it was very clear, like, she was drawing on, like, I was the one who, like, did it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true. That's true. I did notice that and yeah. I did appreciate that. And yeah. it was nice to see that. And it's, that's the thing is that in, when you see an abusive relationship, there's so many people who will say, like, oh, why doesn't she just leave? Or why doesn't she fight back? Well, two things there is that the percentage of women who are killed by their abusers go skyrockets once they try to leave.
Mm-hmm.
It is, you are much more likely to be killed by your abuser if you try to leave the situation than if you stay. And that is a sad statistic.
Yeah, that's terrifying.
And on top of that, for people to say, like, why don't you fight back? I know that we live in a culture where you're not supposed to say this, but most of the time, not all the time, but most of the time, women and men are just built completely different. Upper body strength versus leg strength. And most of the time, men can overpower women. And especially when you have somebody Skarsgård, who is a Viking.
Yeah.
And yeah. he has five women that he's trying to fend off.
And he is.
And he's easily.
Yeah.
Like, all these yeah. women are trying to attack him and subdue him to stop from beating Celeste, and they can't.
Yeah.
It's physically impossible for them to do that.
Right.
And then Bonnie has to come out of nowhere and just use her momentum to push him down the stairs. But if those stairs weren't there, Celeste might be dead.
Right, right.
And that's just the nature of physics.
Right, yeah.
And it's a sad state that we live in, and sad world we live in, where, like, five healthy, you know, women can't defeat one abuser
mm-hmm.
unless, you know, you have a surprise. And it's, I did appreciate seeing that because I think this illustrated an aspect of life that not everybody sees.
Well, and I think sometimes, you know, you could have written it in an unrealistic situation where, okay, like, Celeste is going to take him on. Well,
somebody jumps on his
yeah,
back.
Yeah, and, yeah. Like, and, you know, they defeat him together or, you know, something like that. Or like, you know, oh, someone's really good at kickboxing. You know what I'm saying? Like,
oh, yeah. We see Laura Dern's character. Like, there was some Chekhov's right. gun situation where
exactly.
she's kickboxing. And
right. And, like, yeah. I just appreciated that they didn't bring that into the equation. And it truly was, like, it was much more realistic.
It was.
Of how it would have happened. Mm-hmm. So I appreciated that. And yeah, you're right. I mean, someone like that large of a man, I mean, there's no way someone like Nicole Kidman could physically, you know, compete with him.
I once dated a girl who was a volleyball player, and she was very strong, very physically fit. And she once shared with me, she says, it pisses me off that I go to the gym every single day and I'm very strong, but most men would be able to pin me if I gave them the chance. And it just, I remember, like, for some reason that just stuck with me, that this is a woman who devotes all of her free time to honing her skills and her body. And she just, she's in a world where if she had an abuser, it would be easy for him to take advantage of her. And that pisses me off
yeah.
that we live in this
yeah.
world.
It's scary.
And we saw that in this show. And I think a lot, like you were off taking care of Ripley real quick. I looked on Twitter real quick and saw a lot of positive response to the finale of people saying.
That's good.
Like, you know, like some people saying, like, this is what it's like for people who are abused, or
yeah.
this is what it's like to be in that situation. Nobody really understands.
Right.
And people always say, like, why doesn't she leave him?
Mm-hmm.
And this kind of shines a light on why it's more complicated
yeah,
than
absolutely.
On the surface.
Yeah. And I think I can't speak for all women, but I think every woman has a moment in their life where they've been in that situation with Nicole Kidman, where they're like, do I go or do I stay? And I think, you know, obviously you should get out of that situation. Mm-hmm. But, you know, sadly, I think there is always that moment of, you know, this person could physically harm me. And sadly, you know, there's just a lot of crappy men out there. Yeah. Where, you know,
you don't say.
Yeah, where it's, you know, if you've been lucky enough to not date someone who was, you know, you felt that way even for an instance, and that's awesome. But, you know, obviously not with you because you're amazing, my husband. But, you know, there's a situation where, as a woman, you've been in a situation before where you realize that you're not as strong as a man. And that's really terrifying. And I think mm-hmm. that when women are watching this, they're probably drawing on that feeling. And so, you know, hopefully they can get help or get out of that situation, or, you know, women who haven't been in a situation are aware of it so that they don't even enter into it.
Yeah.
You know, those warning signs, because I'm sure there were warning signs with Celeste. We didn't see them, but there had to be, you know, so.
And that's the thing is that, yeah, you gotta watch out for those warning signs. And it's just like, I'm thinking about my little girl.
Yeah. And of course, how can you not?
It's hard. Yeah, it's hard not to. And you think about, I'm just like, man, I'm going to give this little girl all the self-esteem in the world, because if she gets those warning signs, if she gets those red lights, that she can just walk away.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I have this high school boyfriend grabbed my arm too hard. Done.
Right.
Like, not seeing you ever again.
Yeah.
Like, don't give him an inch.
Yeah. Yeah. Just, it's terrifying, but I feel like, hopefully confidence, you know, hopefully that self-esteem, you know, because clearly, like, Nicole Kidman's character was beaten down. Mm-hmm. Like, she had been beaten down where she didn't even feel like she really could be a lawyer anymore. And, you know, she felt, like, very pigeonholed. And
that's the thing, is that you can have a lot of self-esteem. Right. You can have a lot of confidence. And it's a
dwindles.
Slow, it dwindles down. It's a slow burn. It's not just one big gesture where you're just like, oh, he's an abuser. It's no, it's slow. It's devious.
Yeah.
It's like, ugh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, scary.
It is scary. Well... as we end on this horrible note, at least the show ended. And that's the thing, is that, like, when you have these horrible themes and these horrible situations of sexual violence mm-hmm. and abuse and infidelity and lies and backstabbing, that good, cheesy ending maybe was needed, you know, like, yeah. to show us that there is hope, that we all can get along, and that we all can, if we bound together, we can triumph over evil. You know, maybe that message, maybe it's a good thing that they didn't end in a realistic scenario.
Because I think you would be really depressed.
It's true.
I mean, even just talking about it, it's a depressing subject. It's, you know,
yeah, it is. And so, you know, I take back the negative things that I said about the ending. Maybe that is the knee jerk, but I'm glad that they ended it that way.
Yeah,
because it could have left a sour taste in our mouth.
Absolutely.
All right, well, we've been talking for a long time about this. And so we thank you guys so much for all that you do for the network and the show.
Thank you.
If you if you like what you heard and you like us and you like the show, please go to iTunes and give us a review. If you give us a 5-star rating and a review, we'll mention you on the podcast. And please go to thenerdparty.com for all of our other shows. We have so much content coming at you every single day of the week. We're really proud of what we do on this network. So please give us a shot and go to facebook.com/thenerdparty. Give us a like. You can find us on Twitter @jointhenerdparty. Correction, that's @joinnerdparty. You can find me personally on Twitter @theinsanerobin.
I love you.
I know.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.